Hey folks, welcome to another episode of Passionate Talk. I am your host, Gary Karp, and this is episode number 38. This week's conversation is with corporate mindfulness coach Trent Rhodes. Trent is going to share how Taekwondo led him to a lifelong learning and fascination with mindfulness. He's going to share some of the benefits of being more mindful in business and give us some tips and tools and strategies on how to incorporate mindfulness into our business strategies. We're also going to discuss the importance of taking responsibility in our businesses for everything that happens in and around us. So now, I want you to sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, maybe some tea, and get ready to listen to my conversation with Trent.
And especially the stressors that professionals tend to experience in the workplace and how a mindful practice can actually be a medicine in this regard. Medicine, but also a preventative in the sense that it can help a professional fortify their internal way of being or their mindset so that when they enter the workplace, these experiences that often do come up don't have such a strong impact on that individual, and they can perform to their optimal level. The idea is if we can remove or nullify those barriers, which tend to be inside, we tend to perform better, we present better, we speak better, we write our reports better, we engage with staff and leadership levels better, and it has this holistic effect on our being that going to work doesn't feel like a pain in the ass, so to speak.
Right, and that is extremely important because I'm a firm believer for over 40 years, and I am 52, full disclosure. I know you can't tell by this beautiful, shiny face with a great complexion that I have here, but my crazy Albert Einstein hair that's starting. But I've been working since I was 17, 18. I'm 52 now, and for most of my life, I worked in jobs that I had various levels of enjoyment in, but most of them I wasn't really happy with because I was working for somebody else. I was in an environment that I had to follow certain rules and regulations that I may have not agreed upon, that may have went against me morally or ethically, because we all chase the almighty dollar and we get caught in the trap of having to make certain decisions and having to have that corner office, and that stress level increases when that may not be what we want. And it wasn't until I hit, I'd say 45, that I said, screw it. I've had enough of the corporate mentality. And I changed my mindset and said, I've done it your way for so long, and all it's gotten me is unemployed, divorced, and at that moment, evicted from the apartment I was living in. Let me do it my way. And I changed that whole mindset. So mindset and mindfulness is very important, especially in the corporate environment, because if you can learn how to manage those stressors, as you said, you could be in a better position to move forward in your career and be more productive in your career and have a better quality of life. But it will also help you decide if this career is truly for you and what you truly want. Mindfulness is also a buzzword. It's become very in vogue and very chic in today's society. 10, 15 years ago, if you said mindfulness, you were painted as a new age freak and put into the corner. And now you have professional organizations, the AMA, psychological organizations, businesses are actually bringing in meditation practices and mindfulness practices. So why don't you tell us how you got into mindfulness? And sometime during this interview, I may take the headset off because, it just makes me look like Alfred E. Newman, I think.
That is special technology. I could tell how advanced that is.
Yeah, it's sort of like my half Alfred E. Newman, half Princess Leia look going on. But really, how did you get into mindfulness and why did you decide to marry corporate with mindfulness and help those people?
Sure. My path was at an early start. I would point that time period at about 10 or 11 years old. And that started with martial arts training. The art was Taekwondo. And I went to the Yellow Pages. I was watching The Karate Kid, actually. And literally watching that movie at night. And I just went and grabbed the Yellow Pages. And so I'm going to date myself. We had the physical Yellow Pages, right? We had the booklet.
I just said I was 52. And you, young whippersnapper, were afraid of dating yourself.
Yeah, I'm 34.
But we'll move on from that.
It's just amazing how fast things have changed. So I went and grabbed the booklet, and I'm flipping through the pages. I'm looking for a school that's very close that I could join because I saw this movie. I've been watching it a lot. I've always liked to roll around and jump and such. And so I found this free trial. So I went, grabbed my mother. I said, listen, you have to sign me up to this. We have to go to this trial. Went to the trial. I loved it. These two taller, older Korean brothers. They taught me how to tie my belt for the first time. And it was interesting how professional they were. And just their entire demeanor was just this discipline, which of course came from their training. But the long story short, I loved it. It felt natural to me. And I began practicing. What I did notice, though, was this integration between the physical training and then also this cultivation of mindset.
Hmm.
You know, whether young or old, and we're in a blended environment where there are teenagers and there are youngsters and we're all training, and the types of obstacles that we are faced with test the mind. It tests your mettle. Being able to spar with someone who's larger than you, you have to have your stuff straight, you know?
So is mindfulness one of the tenets of Taekwondo? Do they teach any meditation or any mindfulness practices, or did that just happen naturally as you observed what was going on?
It was a combination of both. There are tenets within the system, which include perseverance and self-discipline and indomitable spirit, which I think would connect most to having a strong mindset. And so when you fall, no one's there to baby you and say, here, let's put a Band-Aid on you. They really cultivate this culture of, how are you going to work through this?
Mm-hmm.
You're hurt. You're going to fall. How are you going to get yourself back up? How do you stand back up? And that training at such a young age, repetitively, I went every day for an hour or two. As I reflect back on that, I see that as the catalyst for this kind of direct understanding of what that mindset is, because it bled over into other areas of my life. So in school, less feelings of stress and pressure, more willingness to take on challenges. When a challenge arrives, being able to navigate my internal structure to see it differently as an opportunity for growth, rather than something that's going to cover me and crush me. And I found that the training provided this kind of this fortification inside. And I wasn't directly conscious of it, you know, at that age. But as I grew into the training, I began to apply that more deliberately in other areas of my life. And it was my first position as an enrollment advisor at the University of Phoenix, where I worked directly with students. And I held many positions, but that first role was enlightening because it was the first time that I was seeing the student have their challenges presented to me. And I was in a position where I was to assist them, you know, navigating through the roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, my experimentation with this was in college and student government. That was another area, just to mention, where I began to hone some of this development and mindset.
So it seems that you have a lot of experience with mindset, or mindfulness, I should say. And it began at an early age with that Taekwondo training. So what do you think is the best benefit for the person, whether it's an entrepreneur or whether it's somebody climbing the corporate ladder? Because I know that's where you make your bones. That's where you focus your energy and your business on, is really the corporate professional, correct?
Yes.
Right. So what advice, what one practical thing could you tell that person who's stressed out over, will I get the promotion? Do I have the proper information to put out in this report? Am I schmoozing the right people to get where I'm going? Am I going to get that salary raise? What will happen if I get fired or the next round of corporate layoffs? Or what advice could you give to that person to just come back to the present moment and center themselves?
Sure. It's the cliched meditation. It goes back to meditating because of what that practice does. And the person will have, there are many variations of meditation, what that can look like.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who's not experienced it before, the very first technique I would suggest is to simply stop and to breathe from the lower abdomen.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. One of the most powerful things I had learned, and I actually learned it from Tony Robbins, because I went to a Tony Robbins seminar when I was in my 20s, way back when. And one of the things that he taught at that point was something that he called a 4-8-8 breathing technique, which I use in my business with my clients. I call it pranic breathing.
Yes.
And essentially it was breathing in through the nose through a count of four, holding it for a count of eight, and then exhaling for a count of eight. And this really calms you down and brings you back to the present moment. It's amazing what will happen if you just concentrate on your breathing and breathe deeply from that diaphragm and just do it for a couple of minutes. It doesn't have to be as formal as I just explained. It could be a couple of deep breaths. Because if you think about it, if you talk to people who are smokers and they'll say, well, smoking calms me down. Well, no, smoking does not calm you down. Smoking contains nicotine. Nicotine is an amphetamine. If anything, smoking increases your heart rate. Exactly. So what's going on is when you smoke, and I smoked for many, many years. About 6 months ago, I was dating a girl and she got me to move over to a vape, which is still bad, but not as bad. Okay. But what's really going on when you're smoking is you are stopping. You are taking that drag of that cigarette and inhaling deeply. You are then holding that smoke in your lungs and you are exhaling that smoke out. So really it's the breathing that is calming you down, not the cigarette.
Yes.
So if folks, if you're listening or you're watching this, because this is my first video version of Passionate Talk here, and I apologize if I'm breaking your computer screens with the beautiful face here. But if you are listening, the simplest way of bringing yourself to the present moment, the simplest way to calm down and return to the present state and really come back into your mind is simply to breathe. Now, could you tell us some success stories of people that you've worked with that you have taken through this mindfulness training? Or before you do that, actually, can you explain what this mindfulness training is that you do with your clients? What kind of procedures do you put them through?
Sure. The primary focuses are understanding the subconscious mind and being able to use that as the primary tool for centering the self. How that works is through direct experience. And so as you described with the breathing and explaining the mechanics, my method is to take the client underneath these experiences and have them be able to verbalize or vocalize what they're experiencing. The combination of the direct experience and explaining how it works, I find to be very effective because it then becomes a tool for them. And so when we have this general understanding of subconscious mind, like there's things happening that we're not aware of, or we're less conscious of more of what's happening within our systems. Our organs do what they do, our heartbeats, our blood flow. So all of these processes take place without us having to do anything. And I introduce the idea that also the beliefs that we have, the self-image that we carry, also fall into this subconscious mind. And if we are not aware of this, we then begin to act out of habit based on these values or beliefs or self-image,
yep,
which then affects or projects how we behave in environments.
Now, that brings up an interesting question, because I'm a huge proponent of self-talk and the self-talk directing exactly where our focus is and how we respond and react to certain things. That, as we said earlier in the pre-interview, that nothing is really good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So what kind of tips would you have for people to watch their self-talk as it relates to mindfulness? And how can this really help people take control and manage their stress levels?
Yeah, I love it. I emphasize some form of taking that information from the mind and putting it on paper. So I emphasize the journaling. I love to do it. It's been a practice, mm-hmm, that I've used for years. Even if the person is not a writer, that skill of being able to take what's inside and putting it outside allows the client to see in a tangible way what is actually happening inside in a framework. So associating that with triggers as well, it does require a level of watching and awareness. So let's say, for example, one client who tends to get stressed when doing presentations. This is a pretty common one. Asking that client to explain, after going under the meditation, the breathing process, which puts them in a state of internal reflection, mm-hmm, and now then going through this exercise of go through the process of the presentation. Take yourself actually there. Visualize it. We're creating a script. And as he's explaining what's going on, to also describe his experiences. So his heart rate's going up, starting to sweat, you mm-hmm know, handshaking, these types of experiences. Now, outside of that scenario, what can we do to help ameliorate the situation? How can we calm? So we go back to the breathing and running that through the visualization. And while he is not actually in the workplace, he's actually going through the work here. And mm-hmm with enough repetition of this exercise, the next time he goes into a presentation, he's going to notice that his body is not reacting as it used to.
Because you've already walked him through that process before it actually happened.
Yes, directly from the subconscious mind. Yep. He's actually reprogrammed his mindset to do something different.
I think that's brilliant. I really do. And visualization is extremely important. But there are times when people are not visually oriented. I know myself, as much as I believe in visualization, I have the damnedest time trying to visualize. I'm more of an audio person than a kinesthetic person. So visualization for me is very challenging. So for our listeners out there who may find it challenging to visualize, is there something else they can do along the same lines of that exercise to get them the same result?
It is, I would say, if a person has an auditory inclination, mm-hmm, you can use that medium, but it's very difficult to not visualize at all. It's because of how our mind is organized, in that we have images, we have ideas. If something is described to that individual, even in a verbal way, there's going to be a conjuring of some type of imagery, you know?
Okay, so let's take it a different tack then, because I do agree with you, because even though, as I said, I have trouble visualizing, if someone describes something to me, that picture will pop in my head.
Yeah.
So how could we, if it is part of that mindset, and it could be possibly that I've said for many years, I can't visualize, I can't picture, I can't this, I can't that, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. How could we get people who may have trouble visualizing to break through that and actually, yep, start to get a clearer picture in their mind?
Another modality that I offer is creative or mindful journaling. And I ran two workshops this the past 2 weeks, precisely with experiencing this kind of scenario. The ability to not be able to visualize, as you're saying, as you're explaining, is the self-fulfilling block. And we actually could go so many layers deep into this self-programming mm-hmm. with statements like, you know, I am just this, I am that, I cannot do this. These power statements are reversed in the sense that they create blocks rather than unlock our abilities or potential. When we say we cannot, or I am this, this is all I am, this is the only way I can be. In that scenario, that the challenge then is to assist the client with altering that program. So that program stands as I am only. It doesn't matter what I do on top of that. If I cannot assist with helping to remove that barrier, then it is in vain.
So really, you are working specifically with the core belief, that core belief of changing I can't visualize to I paint Picasso in my head, or that belief that I'm not good enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not successful enough to get that guy or girl, to change that core belief to I have everything I need and all the resources inside myself to be as successful as I choose to be.
Yes. And this is why
everything starts with that core belief, and you help people through mindfulness change that core belief, and then everything stacks on top of everything else.
Yes, because it's near impossible to assist an individual or be handling out that space for a client to tackle every single, you know, challenge that comes their way. But that's the intent isn't that. The intent mm-hmm. is this seed. What is that seed that is actually facilitating the navigation of how we see things and being able to work with that?
Okay, so once you get down to the seed, that core belief, as I say, what tools, what tips do you give to your clients to help them change that from a disempowering belief or a disempowering core belief or seed to a more empowering belief? How do you yep. get them to lock that in?
Sure. It's through being it. And so the ultimate goal is to practice. One technique that is effective is posturing, which may seem silly, but being able to stand straight, hold the neck high, walk. Client, for example, in the city, the practice was to be able to go and walk. Just walk. But walk with confidence. Walk with an intent to look into people's eyes. You don't know who they are, but you're looking in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been comfortable doing this before, but the challenge is now actually doing it and getting exposure to looking in someone's eyes you don't know. Get exposure to saying hello to someone you don't know. He had an interest in professional attire, so we walked into a few of the shops, mm-hmm. and I took him through the practice of walk around and find what resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
Touch the clothes. Take them off the rack. Wear them. Put them on. Try it on.
You know, that may sound like a very simple thing. And I know most people, when they want results or they're looking for an answer, they're looking for the biggest, most complicated answer in the world. But similar to how we said with breathing, it sometimes comes down to the simple things. Just if you are shy or you need to build the confidence, to walking around and acting as if, as I say, okay? You call it posturing. I say act as if. Act as if you had that confidence, and then approach that salesperson, approach that client that you want, approach that girl or that guy that you want to date as if they've already said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's several mechanics that are happening in that place. One is it's creating a self-image for the client, in that they are now stepping into by taking that action. Two, by repeating this process, what's happening in the mind, they're actually forming new connections, so new yep. neural connections.
Yep.
Doing it repeatedly will actually solidify those connections, and they now have a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in that environment, looking in someone's eyes won't feel so tough. It'll actually feel like what we call second nature, which is when it becomes us. It becomes second nature when we do it repeatedly. In our environment today, there's this, that habit is now focused on doing something and then receiving an immediate result.
Really?
What this really boils down to is, if you look on social media and you see the ads, a lot of these ads are, especially the ones that are about making money, they're mm-hmm. positioned in a way that if you do these five steps, you will automatically begin to generate, you know, $10,000 a month.
Absolutely.
However, the reality within that structure is it takes work. It takes time, yes. and it takes this repetitive type of discipline that you're describing. So even in those types of posts, we can see some of the true nuggets are actually being left out.
And that actually goes back to what you were saying before when it comes to commitment and the state of your mind and how you're going to respond to something, because there's no such thing as a get-rich-quick scheme, okay? All these people that are out there are saying, you know, I made $1 million flipping houses. I generate six figures writing ebooks for Amazon, or I created a sales funnel that got me $25,000 in a month. Now, are these things possible? Yes, they are. However, it takes time, dedication, and commitment to get to these things, because first you have to learn the processes and understand the processes in the psychology, and then you can implement it. You're not going to spend $79.95 on a package or an online course, and then in 3 days, your whole life is going to change. It will take consistent action, and that role goes right back to mindfulness, because for me, mindfulness is not only about the Zen nature of returning to the present, namaste. It's about the constant and consistent thoughts that you have in your head that you keep in your head for moving towards your goal. It's the intention that you put in your brain every single day to help you achieve your goal.
Precisely. And that having that solidified within the professional, it becomes much simpler to navigate the various challenges that someone would face in the environment. So whether it's an HR issue, whether it's just a direct conflict between coworkers. One blog post recently I wrote on was about the yellow chakra. And for the viewers who are familiar with the chakra systems, of course, there are the main seven, and they have they are connected to various energetic tendencies or habits that we express. And so the yellow is focused on self-esteem. It's focused on willpower. It's focused on charisma and the self-image. And so I connected that chakra to bullying in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person is not grounded in that space, they can be susceptible to pressures from coworkers and supervisors and other folks who are in that environment who may take a stance that appears superior to them, and that professional cannot fight back or does not know what to do to handle that situation. And so coming back to mindfulness, having that program in place where I can handle my situation, I am confident, I have boundaries, I know, you know, I understand where I need to take action, even though they don't have the specific solution in place, having that program in place will allow them to find the solution.
Right. And what you're saying reminds me of something, and I want to get your opinion on it, that part of mindfulness for me is taking responsibility, that everything in your life is your responsibility. The good, the bad, the ugly, everything comes down to how you are going to react to it, how you are going to respond to it, the meaning you are going to give to it. So many people who have stresses in their lives play the victim, in my opinion. If they're bullying at the workplace, they are blaming the other person without looking at what they may be doing consciously or subconsciously to bring this bullying upon themselves. Now, this may not be a popular thing to say, but the only thing we can control is the mind. So how important is taking responsibility for every aspect of your life? You may not be able to stop the bullying, to be using this example, but you can, as you said before, decide what the program you're going to run is when you are being bullied. Are you going to succumb to it? Are you going to let it beat you down? Are you going to explode at that person? Or are you just going to shrug it off and be like a water off a duck's back and not let that person get under your skin or live rent-free in your brain?
It's so important.
How can people learn to stop playing the victim and take responsibility for their lives?
It does require looking at themselves in a full scale. And so in my methodology, working with clients, I would use journaling, of course, or some means of writing, because the individual has to be able to accept, as you're saying, the full spectrum of experiences. And those that they are uncomfortable with accepting, those are the ones I would encourage to write down, put those down, and to look at them. And to, if it takes 2 weeks, if it takes 2 months, the important thing is to not turn away from those experiences that the knee-jerk reaction is to blame someone else. Those are the ones to focus on and come to an acceptance that they are my experiences. I have lived those experiences, and I have contributed to how that's played out, how that's manifested, because I'm in it. I'm in the experience. Once that level is reached, then the individual will be able to enter these environments, and now they have that selection of options. You know, how do I decide to choose to respond to the situation?
Exactly.
Without reaching that level and doing that work, it only returns to an outward or external focus. So this person, you know, stole my papers for the presentation. This person is bullying me. This person is causing me this problem. This person is causing me this stress. I can't work right here because I can't handle it because this person is talking in this way. So
I got passed over for a promotion because I'm too old or I'm too fat, or the other person has having an affair with the HR manager, or whatever the story is that we're talking about in our head that we're telling ourselves.
Right. These elements are taking place, as you explained, independent of a label. Mm-hmm. And once we then begin to apply a label to the situation, we then begin to create what people call the reality. We're giving an identity to the experience, which then, you know, affects us. So if someone stole my papers for the presentation, the fact is someone stole my papers for the presentation. What do I put on that experience? Do I put that as this is just horrible and I'm never going to be successful? I can't do this anymore. Or is this a challenge for me to be in have an ingenious way of recreating that presentation?
Now, Trent, I want to thank you because you have dropped truth nuggets left and right on helping people learn how to use mindfulness and a couple of tips and tricks to help them manage their state in a corporate environment and even outside the corporate environment. But right now, I'm going to give you the floor so you can talk directly to the listeners and let them know how they can contact you and what services you offer, and anything else that you want to promote.
Sure. I have mindful coaching as a one-on-one practice. I also assist organizations with staff. And so that can involve a customized presentation, a customized service, depending on the need. And that can go from LinkedIn, how to set up a LinkedIn profile and communicate on social media, to how to send emails that are effective between correspondences. And I also have a tiered system where I do not do placement, but I do assist with professional documents, which tend to be a challenge for some. So that's completing applications, it's resume, proofreading and editing, it's cover letters, thank you letters, how to put together a package for an interview, how to set yourself up for your first 90 days on a job, how to skill build, how to create a journal for yourself in the workplace. There's a myriad of options that I can provide that will be valuable to professionals so that they enter the workplace as with an entrepreneur's mindset. You know, they're an employee, but they can still take ownership of their environment. And how do they do that and create some value for themselves as well as organizations? I also write on education. So I have books at my website, iamtrentrhodes.com, where I cover modes of self-education, modes of tutoring, modes of how to see the life experience as a classroom, and all of that ties into mindfulness. I also have a blog, crownofmind.com, which is increasing in content. One of my mindful commitments was to increase the value of this blog starting since January. So there's quite a lot of content there already, but it covers the span of a lot of our discussion today, where I blend some of these practices with office environment and being able to navigate these systems.
Well, okay. And just one more time, because I know you slipped them in there and our listeners may not have heard it. So one more time for us, give us the website and the blog website that people can find.
Sure. My portfolio is iamtrentrhodes.com. And on there, my blog can be found. But if you want to go directly, it is crownofmind.com.
And folks, if you're listening to this in your car or in your headset, going to work, you're commuting, maybe you're on a lunch break or you're at the gym, and you didn't have time to get those and jot those website addresses down, you're going to find them all on the Passionate Talk website. If you go to www.passionatetalk.com, click on the interview link for Trent or type his name in the search bar up top, and his interview page will pop up with all the links that we were talking about and a timestamp blow by blow of the highlights of the conversation we had. So head on over to passionatetalk.com if you miss any of that information. Trent, I want to take a moment right now and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share this information on mindfulness with my listeners.
And thank you.
And I hope you have a wonderful day.
You as well. Take care, Gary.
That was a great conversation with Trent. I usually think of mindfulness in terms of a personal life and a personal journey. I never really considered mindfulness and business in the same breath or in the same thought. So I want to thank Trent for dropping those truth nuggets and giving us all those great tips and strategies. I loved that when he works with his clients, he gets them to their core issues, their core beliefs on what they believe business means to them, or what the anxiety or nervousness in their business is really all about. That question that he asks, what is that seed? Where are those feelings of anxiety, of nervousness, of uncertainty coming from? Wonderful. The story that he told about walking his client through the fashion store and having him try on the clothes, feel the clothes, take them off the rack, talk to the salespeople, make eye contact with them in order to help them get over their fear of meeting new people and being out in public was some wonderful, wonderful advice. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Passionate Talk. So until Monday, follow your dreams and passions and manifest the life that you choose.